Morning, everyone. We're in Psalm 65 this morning. We'll begin in verse 1. And there will be silence before thee, and praise in Zion, O God. And to thee the vow will be performed. O thou who dost hear prayer, to thee all men come. Iniquities prevailed against me. And as for our transgressions, thou dost forgive them. How blessed is the one whom thou dost choose to bring near to thee, to dwell in thy courts. We will be satisfied with the goodness of thy house, thy holy temple. I will just stand right there. I'd like to focus this morning on verses 3 and 4. David says, iniquities prevail against me, and as for our transgressions, thou dost forgive them. The meaning of the text is pretty simple. Those who are the Lord, who are accepted by the Lord's pardon or forgiveness, are continuously guests in his house. This vehicle, the forgiveness of God, in spite of their transgressions, it says David's iniquities and the people's transgression, God forgives them. And David says, it's a blessed thing that thou dost choose people to bring them near to thee, dwell in thy courts, and to be satisfied with the goodness of thy holy temple. So this is a wonderful thing to be allowed to live in God's presence. Now, before we focus really on those verses, we should realize that David, as he wrote this psalm, assumed that the people of God were well acquainted with their spiritual history. Their history, both recent and their history ancient. Now, recently, David, in his zeal for God, had brought the Ark of the Covenant of God into the city of David, which is known as Zion or Jerusalem. The city would be the new capital of Israel. 2 Samuel Chapter 6, verse 17 says, and they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent which David had pitched for it. Did you know David set up a tent in Jerusalem? He did, and that's where he put the Ark of the Covenant. It remained there for a little while. But David also assumed that Israel knew their older history. Israel's ancient history was also a constant in the life of the nation as they read and reread the books of Moses. They knew, the people of God knew what had happened in Exodus. They were well aware of their history. As the people wandered in the wilderness after escaping the tyranny of Egypt, Moses instructed Israel to build a sanctuary, a tabernacle. Exodus chapter 25, verses 8 and 9. God said through Moses, let them construct a sanctuary for me, that I may dwell among them. According to all that I'm going to show you as the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all of its furniture, just so you shall construct it. Now this was a portable tent that the Israelites would carry around with them as they wandered in the wilderness. This tent was not for the people. But it was for God Himself. It was a glorious truth that God was now teaching his people by instructing them to build the tabernacle. As they lived in the earth, God was wanting to live among them. The people in their tents and God living in a tent or being in a tent in their midst. What an amazing condescension on God's part. God says, I'm going to live with you. You remember the plan? The temple of the tabernacle there? And all the children of Israel were camped around. The Levites closest in, and then the different tribes all around about. But what was the glory that God chose to be among them? You'll remember that the ark of God was placed in the tabernacle. It was a simple wooden box which contained the Ten Commandments that God had written with his own hand on Mount Sinai. God's presence was to be with his people. And God was saying, obey these simple Ten Commandments and you'll know my presence. And even as God dwelt with them in the camp, he had made provisions for when they had failed to obey. And thus all the elaborate laws of the first five books that were in the book of Moses and Exodus and Deuteronomy about sacrifice. So he made this elaborate law wherein they would understand that forgiveness didn't come cheap, you might say. Something had to die. Now, David, when he brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, made many sacrifices. You remember that? They took 10 steps finally when he figured it all out and they made more sacrifices. Says in 2 Samuel 6, verse 17, so they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent which David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings, peace offerings before the Lord. Now we know much about the tabernacle of Moses, but very little about that tent. I'm just saying this, I'm making up a word here. This tent temple on Mount Zion. It is assumed that it was pretty nice, glorious maybe. But the tabernacle that Moses had constructed remained in Gibeon. Did you know that? Now the next step in biblical history, and we're now looking forward instead of backwards, was the stone temple that Solomon would construct in Jerusalem. Now Solomon, this is 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verses 1 and 2. Solomon decided to build a house for the name of the Lord and a royal palace for himself. So Solomon assigned 70,000 men to carry loads and 80,000 men to quarry stone in the mountains, and 3,600 men to supervise them. I wonder what the ratio between supervisors and workers there. I'd have to work. Roy Dean, will you figure that out for me one of these days?
Yes, I will.
That'd be interesting to know. 70,000 men to carry loads, and 80,000 men to quarry stone, and 3,600 as supervisors. That'd be interesting to know. Anyway, in 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 1 through 11, then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel. This is now the temple has been built. assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes, the leaders of the fathers' households of the sons of Israel, to King Solomon in Jerusalem, to bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from the city of David, which is Zion. They brought up the Ark of the Lord and the tent of meeting and all the holy utensils which were in the tent, and the priests and the Levites brought them up. Now, you listen to what it says. And there was nothing in the ark except the two tablets of stone which Moses put there at Horeb, where the Lord made a covenant with the sons of Israel when they came out of the land of Egypt. And it came about when the priest came from the holy place that the cloud filled the house of God. And the priest could not stand a minister because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the house of the Lord. Now, when God in His glory came into Solomon's temple, the teaching was complete. God sought to live among His people as they lived in the promised land. God had brought them forward to this point. I want to be in your midst. And He proved that by coming to that temple. When Solomon, after Solomon had prayed, he proved it to us. Now, the sons of Korah would teach Israel to sing psalms. And in Psalm 84, verses 1 through 7, it says this: How lovely are thy dwelling places, O Lord of hosts! My soul longed, even yearned for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh sing for joy to the living God. The birds have found a place in thy house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even thine altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. How blessed are those who dwell in thy house. They are ever praising thee. How blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, and whose hearts are the highways to Zion. Passing through the valley of Baca, they made it a spring. The early rain also covers it with blessings. They go from strength to strength, every one of them appearing before God in Zion. Now, this idea that God would dwell among His people have several realities associated with it, and we're going to touch on those. Number one, we are in constant need of forgiveness. That is the sacrifices of Jesus. That's the New Testament teaching on this. Verse 3, our iniquities prevail against me. Pardon me, my iniquities prevail against me. Our transgressions, thou dost forgive them. How blessed is the one whom thou dost choose to bring near to thee to dwell in thy courts. Again, those who are accepted by the Lord's pardon, He brings that they may dwell in His house. Zechariah chapter 13, verse 1 says, In that day a fountain will be opened for the house of David, for the inhabitants of Jerusalem, for sin and for impurity. Jesus is our sacrifice. He is our purity. If the people of God would be clean from sin and defilement, Jesus is the fountain to which they may continually come. Now, when God works among men, it is not to the perfect with which He works. He doesn't come. He doesn't look through the earth and find the perfect man. Do we know that? He comes to sinners and He gets glory from the weak things of the earth by living among them. Now, God's sole purpose, the sole purpose of our faith is here as well. The main purpose here taught in these passages is that men could get to know God. He would live in their midst. That's the glory of it. That's the whole glory of the tabernacle and God being there with the children of Israel in the desert. It's the glory that David wanted to know God, and he wanted that Ark of the Covenant in his capital city. And he did everything he could to get it there. And a few things he shouldn't do, but he ultimately did. God is the focus of all of this. O God, thou art my God, I shall seek thee earnestly. My soul thirsts for thee, my flesh yearns for thee in a dry and weary land where there is no water. Thus I have beheld thee in thy sanctuary to see thy power in thy glory. The people of God came to the sanctuary, David's tent, Moses' tent, and then in Solomon's temple to find God. Thus says the Lord, let not a wise man boast in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast in his might. Let not the rich man boast in his riches. But let him who boasts boast in this, that he understands and knows me. Jeremiah 9, verse 23 and following. John 17, in the New Testament. And this is eternal life, that they may know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. This is the great focus of the Bible, is that men can come to know God. And as New Testament believers, they come to know Him in Jesus. The sole purpose of our faith is this. We simply want to know God. Psalm 84, verses 1 and 2. How lovely are thy dwelling places, O Lord of hosts. My soul longed and even yearned for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh sing for joy to the living God. Is there any pleasure in Christianity? Is he good? Is God good? Is Jesus good? Is God worth seeking? Is the kingdom of God like a treasure found in a field, and finding it, you go and sell everything you have for that field? When the church, God's congregation, Old Testament and New, had a passion for God, they were then primed to actually find Him. Those who hunger are fed. Those who seek, find. Remember the verse that we read just right at the start? To dwell in thy courts, we will be satisfied with the goodness of thy house, thy holy temple. Would you know deep, deep satisfaction in life? Does anybody want that? You know what satisfying is, don't you? Being satisfied? That's pushing everything else away and say, I've got it. This satisfaction is in our King, Jesus. Would you know goodness in abundance? It's in God's holy temple, His dwelling place. Now, another thing that's taught here is that God is a God of wonders. And those who dwell in the ends of the earth stand in awe of thy signs. Thou dost make the dawn and the sunset shout for joy. And this is in the same psalm there with it, which we read a while ago. It should be our grief that God is not showing himself as being among his people here in the Western Church. This should grieve us. It says in 1 Kings that the priest could not stand to minister because of the cloud and the glory that filled the house of the Lord that Solomon had built. There was a definite, clear sign that he was among them. And it should be a grief to us that it's not clear to the surrounding world around the church today in America, that the people around about don't notice that God is among us. Now, these realities cannot be faked. Either God is manifesting himself among God's congregation, or he's not. When I was a young man, and I'm not as zealous as I used to be for God, and it's sad to my own heart as I look at my own heart, but one of the things that was constantly in my heart, I was tired of the merely human religion. I just wearied with it. Everything about the church seemed to be so human, merely human. Paul would say in the New Testament era that the church meetings should demonstrate the very presence of God among his people. You read 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 25. There it says that the believer will fall on his face and worship God, declaring that God is certainly among you. And this, I clearly side with those who believe in miracles, that they should be part of the New Testament experience. I believe that. And when I say miracles, something that is beyond the human. People should see in the church today, among God's congregation, this spiritual Israel, there's something there about those people. Now, these miracles that I speak of don't have to be miracles of great drama. But God is such a God, he will manifest himself among us. And he does this that we might glory in him, that we might have joy in him, that we might have peace in him in the great trials of life. God would manifest himself among us. Now, these realities were all demonstrated and foretold in the concept that God would tabernacle. I like that, that God would tabernacle or dwell among his people. He would set his tent up among us. And he would live with us. We should let this sink into our souls, and we should seek it with all our might, that his people in our day have fellowship with God, who would want to dwell among us. The teaching of the tabernacle of Moses, David's tent on Mount Zion, and Solomon's temple there in Jerusalem are not some obscure ancient religious cult that we read like archaeologists. Rather, we should see them as God teaching us in quite literal ways that he would have us seek him. And in seeking him, what would happen? Well, there's a promise. Steve just said it. We would find him. To read the Psalms of David or to read accounts of a man who was passionate for his God and God's glory, a man who hungered after God and his righteousness. To read the history of David is to read the history of a man who would go to great lengths to find God. For David, if he knew anything, he knew that his God could be found if one only sought him. It's not real difficult, is it, Steve? The Old Testament, intimated that the tabernacle and the temple were below here on this earth, were symbolic of a heavenly one. You will remember that Isaiah in chapter 6 speaks of the prophet's vision of a heavenly tabernacle, a heavenly temple. In the year that King Uzziah's death, I saw the Lord sitting on his throne, lofty and exalted, with his train filling the temple. So all this teaching about temples and tabernacles and all this stuff was really to teach us that we are to seek the presence of our God. Now you'll remember that Solomon said, "No temple I can find can hold you," you might say. And here's why. Because God was heavenly. Now, a great and magnificent reality was coming. Jesus spoke of it. And now we're leaving the Old Testament here and we're striking off a path into the New Testament. Jesus spoke of it when he was speaking to that Samaritan woman at the well. And she asked a very religious question. Where should we be worshiping? Should we be worshiping here on this mountain in Samaria or in Jerusalem? Our fathers worshiped in this mountain. And you people say that in Jerusalem is the place where men ought to worship. Kind of like that you people. She's kind of separating herself out, wasn't she? It's telling. And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, an hour is coming when neither in this mountain nor in Jerusalem shall you worship the Father. You worship that which you do not know. We worship that which we know, for salvation is among the Jews, is from among the Jews. But an hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers shall worship the Father in spirit and in truth. For such people the Father seeks to be his worshipers." Now, isn't that interesting? God seeks us to. He's seeking out people who would come to him and he could reveal himself to. God is a spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. The Gospels and throughout the New Testament, these truths become very clear. God is seeking a people to worship him. People who are to worship him wholly and completely on spiritual terms. It's not when we stand or don't stand, or whether we kneel and pray with kneeling benches. It's not about high church or low church. It's not about worship styles. And some congregations, if you don't have a band up here with some drums and a fella in a glass cage, have y'all ever seen that? It's not about that stuff. It's not about stained glass windows. I like stained glass windows. I love to watch little children when they go into a fancy church and a lot of stained glass windows. They just sit there and go. So I don't mind. I don't mind fancy stuff, but that isn't the point. Because that'll wear off. But if they know God, that won't wear off. We, by the Spirit, can in an instant enter into the realms of heaven, God's spiritual tabernacle, and be with Him. Our souls will dart off into the heavenly world, into that spiritual place. And it's there that we do not come face to face, and thank goodness for what I'm getting ready to say. It is there that we do not come face to face with the Ten Commandments. Rather, we come to Jesus and the cross wherein we are accepted. Glory, glory, glory. During Jesus' life, the realities of the Old Testament tabernacle and the temple were passing away. But you remember that amazing moment when Jesus entered the temple in Jerusalem and fashioned Himself a whip to chase out money changers. John chapter 2, verse 13 through 17. The Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to the Jerusalem. And He found in the temple those who were selling oxen and sheep and doves and money changers. And He made a scourge of cords and drove them out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And He poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And to those who were selling doves, He said, "Take these things away. Stop making My Father's house a house of merchandise." His disciples remembered this and said, "Zeal for Thy house will consume Me." Now this passage comes at the end of the age about which we are speaking. Moses, David, Solomon, even though a new day was coming, Jesus was zealous over the purity and the worship among God's people. And I think this is instructive. If we would know the presence of God among us, it may very well be, and He may very well come to us at first, the way He came to Jerusalem, "The zeal for Thine house will consume Me." He comes to His people, and He often first comes to deal with our sins. Are we willing for this? Any of y'all willing for that? Clearly, it was uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable in Jesus' day in that temple. And in our day, His coming to us may be uncomfortable as well. But here, we are now back to our text. "Iniquities prevail against Me. As for our transgressions, Thou dost forgive them. How blessed is the one whom Thou dost choose to bring near to Thee, to dwell in Thy courts, and to be satisfied with the goodness of Thy house, Thy holy temple." Do you remember how we began? Those who are accepted by the Lord's pardon and forgiveness are His continuous, I'm going to put it this way now, house guest. They live with Him continuously. Now there's an opportunity for each one of us to dwell in His presence. For when we come to Him, His pardon is sure. Transgression and iniquities are forgiven. Now I'd like to read, as I close, simple two passages out of the New Testament that I hope get in your spirit as we read them. "But you have come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to myriads of angels, and to the general assembly and the church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven. To God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel. Glory, glory. Revelation chapter 21. By the way, that was from Hebrews. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there's no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down of heaven, out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is among men. He shall dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be among them." This is where this great story is driving to. This is the whole point of it all, that we can know him. And he would tabernacle among us.